when we start rebuilding our lives. No different than when Nehemiah started rebuilding the wall of Jerusalem, there's going to be critics. Real quick review, what response did he get? Trying to do this wonderful thing, being so selfless, so unselfish, he gave up his normal life to take on this very taxing, very difficult project. And what was the reaction of people? Rather than saying, "Oh, so good, that thing, congratulations on your decisions, you're doing a wonderful job, man, somebody's been needing to do this," what were the reactions of those people? Real quick, I'm not going to list them, you tell me, what were they? There was anger, there was mocking, threats. Nobody wanted to help. It can't be done. They sabotaged them, ridiculed, threatened them, and tried in every way they could to discourage them. In chapter 6, it comes up again, which tells you something about these people who distract, these people that discourage, these people that try to deter you from getting God's work done in your life or in your family or in this church. What does it do? What does it say? The fact that it comes up again, what does it tell you? You're not, they're not going to give up. You are not going to ever go through some point where everybody's going to be saying, "Oh, it's so good, let's all go." No. There always will be critics. There will always be complaints. There will always be criticisms. What we've got to do is we've got to keep building, focus on the building. Nehemiah is going to teach us how today. Nehemiah chapter 6, we welcome our old friend. Who is he? What's his name? Old Sanballat. Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies. Word came to them that I had rebuilt the wall and not a gap was left in it. Through up to that time, I had not yet set the doors and the gates. Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message: "Come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono." Now stop a second. Stop. On face value, just face value, why would somebody that's been opposed to him this whole time, why would somebody that's threatened, why would somebody that's ridiculed, why would somebody that's refused to help, why would somebody who's been a complete discouragement for all the time he's been building, why would they want to meet? Think through it. I didn't hear any of those. Take you out. Sabotage. Again, I don't know what it is in us, but I see it in us, and I see it in my counseling. There can be people who have been opposed to somebody's personal growth or somebody's changing in their life, maybe having to overcoming their addiction or trying to take control of their eating. I mean, there's just all kinds of examples to give you. And then they will say, "Well, I got a call from my ex," or "I got a call from my mother. I got a call from somebody who's been critical this whole time, and they want me to come over and talk to them." And you know what happens 9 times out of 4? Yeah. What were you saying? It's a distraction. Why do we assume that now that we've made progress, that the people that have been our critics are going to encourage us? No. Well, I gave you the answer. Look what Nehemiah sees. He said, "But they were scheming to harm me." Now, folks, how did he know that? Is this miraculous insight from God? The patterns in their behavior over an extended period of time, what could he predict? If you know somebody's pattern in the past, is it pretty easy to predict their future? Now, is it always true? Not always true, because people can change, right? But have we gotten an apology anywhere from Sanballat? Has old Geshem the Arab ever said, "You know, man, I made a mistake, man, I'm going to help you"? Has anybody repented here? No. "So they were scheming to harm me. So I sent messengers to them." Oh, this takes care of teaching itself. "I sent messengers to them with this reply: I'm carrying on a great project and cannot go down." He said, oh no, to the plaint of oh no. Okay, I love that line. I had an old teacher said it. I wrote it in my Bible a long time ago. Say oh no to the plaint of oh no. You're rebuilding your life. You're trying to break away from an addiction. And the parents that have enabled you, or the children that have been critical of you, they want to have a meeting, or they want to talk to you, or they want to get you to understand what their position is. What do you have a right to say? Oh no. Oh no. Oh no. Now why? Why do you have that right? Read the next phrase. Why should I stop the work? Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down? I'm carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop and I leave it and go down to you? What's Nehemiah's reaction? I know what their intent is. It says they were scheming. They were trying to distract. They wanted to harm. They wanted to stop. What is Nehemiah's reaction? Teach me. Yeah, oh, yes, I can say no. Now, why do I need... Oh, do we need to go on? Yeah, we got to go into this. Second meeting, we're going to spend a lot of time on this. Why is it right for us, or why is it needed for us to learn to be able to say no to people? We need to know our limits because we have limits. And number two, other people need to know our limits because they won't know them unless we give them. You got to teach people how to treat you. Make sense? So why is it so hard for us to say no to people? Now think through this. And I want this personal. I'm not looking for theory, Sunday school answers, none of that stuff. I'm looking for personal struggle, honest observation, examination of your life. Why is it difficult for us to say no to people? We're afraid that we'll lose our relationship if we tell somebody no. If that's true, it's not a healthy relationship anyway. Give me another reason. Why do we have such difficulty? There is a subtle spiritualized teaching that takes place, and we are taught basically that if somebody asks you for something, if somebody needs something, then you just have to say yes. If you say no, you're selfish. You are not being like Jesus. Now, folks, I think more so than us fellows, I think some of you ladies have been influenced that way to an extreme. What you want to learn now is sometimes it is the healthy thing. Sometimes it is the godly thing. Sometimes it is the Lord's thing to say, oh no, to the plaint of no, oh no. Because you have that right to protect yourself. You have that right to set your limits and set your boundaries. But the Scriptures also teach, if a man won't work, don't let him eat. The Scriptures also teach you don't give pearls to swine or what is sacred to dogs. I understand we don't want to be selfish. You understand? We're not talking about being selfish. We're talking about being... Give me another word. We're talking about prudent, wise. We're talking about being self-aware of what we need. Did Jesus heal every blind man? Now, we only know of one or two he healed, right? Did Jesus heal every leper? So that implies what? Were they the only ones that came and begged him for sight? Were they the only ones that came and begged him for cleansing? I bet not, since John says the whole world could be filled with the books of the things he did. He had to sometimes say no. In fact, he would heal. They'll come up to him, what about this? Could you help me with this? He said, let other folks handle that. He taught us that there's a time to say no. So maybe in a part of my rebuilding, and I'm putting me at the top of this list, sometimes in my rebuilding, what I need to do is I need to think in terms of it may be best, it may be right, it may be spiritual, it may be healthy for me to say no. Now, what's their reaction going to be? You know, mocking, threats, angry, that kind of thing. Folks, when you change your behavior and you're trying to rebuild and you start change your behavior, guess what the reaction of those people that are used to your behavior will do? They will not always understand and they will sometimes react poorly. So what do you have to do? Say, oh no to the oh no, right? Four times they sent me the same message, and each time I gave them the same answer. Two things I need to learn from that. Are they going to stop? No. So what's my response? What do I learn should be my response? I give them the same answer. Every time they ask the same foolish, distracting, unhealthy thing, what do I give them? The same wise, healthy, godly answer. There will be people that will try to stop you from rebuilding your life. They'll try to stop you from rebuilding your family. Now, you understand, when we start this process, are we going to make some mistakes? Are we going to put some bricks down without mortar? Yep. And are people going to notice it? Are they going to pick our building apart, a little wall apart? Oh, you got that brick out of place. That's not quite in line. We're going to have all those kind of critics. What do? We ignore that person because they don't have any part in this and keep rebuilding. And every time they want to, we need to talk about this. We need to sit down and talk about this. What do? If you're building, you're doing a great work, don't stop the great work. It happens sometimes. It's not happened in a long time here like used to happen when we first started meeting. But I would get calls from people who wanted to have a meeting to determine what we were doing here. I used to say, I'm sorry, I don't have time. I had a full-time job anyway. Plus, then our work here is a full-time deal too. So if you want to, and I told several, and I was very kind about it, really was. It's hard to believe I was kind, but I was very kind. I would say, listen, if you want to know what we're doing, come over and watch us. Come over and see. Come be a part of this thing. All right. They ask, we answer. Then the fifth time, Sanballat sent his aid to me. Okay, if they can't get you distracted, if they can't get you to stop the work, they do something else. Sanballat saw that his method wasn't working, and so he sent his aid to me with the same message, and in his hand was an unsealed letter. What was the point of an unsealed letter? It's no secret to this thing. Anybody could read it. Now, that's going to be important here in a minute. It is reported among the nations, and Geshem says it's true. When Geshem says it, it's got to be true, right? Because old Geshem, the Arab, he never did anything wrong. You know who that Geshem represents in our world? The they. Well, they said. They told me. Who? Well, I don't know, just they. Well, who is they? I want to meet them. I want to meet the they and us have this conversation. Well, I don't know who they are. They just... Oh, Geshem is the they. They say it's true that you and the Jews are plotting to revolt and you're building the wall. Moreover, according to these reports, you're about to become their king and they have even appointed prophets to make this proclamation that when you're about you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah. Now this report will get back to the king, so come, let us confer together. What did Sanballat just up the ante? He just raised the tension. What's his point here? There's two things. Did you see them? Start rumors about you, and this the second one is the one that gets my gut the most. He questions Nehemiah's motives. Why did he leave his job? Why did he leave his family? Why did he leave his normal life and to come in Jerusalem and take on this horrible project? Because it's what he believed God wanted him to do, and it was in his heart to do it, right? What have his motives been from the beginning? To honor God and to help people. Hang on a second. Is it possible that there are people that will question your motives when all you're intending to do is to honor God and to help people? Folks, and if it hadn't happened to you here, you and I need to sit down and visit. Because if it hadn't happened, it will happen. There are people that will challenge what we do. They'll challenge us even being here. And they'll question motives. Well, I know why you're doing that. You start questioning my motives, you start questioning your motives, what happens to us? Honest, what happens to us when somebody starts questioning our motives? We begin to doubt what we're doing. I don't know why it is in us, but church folks are more like this than anybody else I know. Somebody questions our motives, and we start questioning our motives. Well, I don't know if I did that for the right reason. Well, if you don't know, who does? But we worry about that. Well, I don't know if that was that. Did I do that for the right motive? I mean, I've been teaching this Bible class for a few years, but I don't know if I'm doing it for, maybe I'm just doing it for my glory. I promise you, if you're teaching a Bible class, it ain't for your glory. Right? I have people once in a while say, well, you know, you get glory when you stand up front and speak. And I always want to tell them, I said, you ain't never been up front speaking. You don't know what you're talking about. But people will question your motives, and we start questioning them. What else do we do? We get defensive. And we start trying to explain ourselves. Now, all the time that I'm questioning my motives, or all the time I'm trying to explain my motives, either way, what's happening? I'm not doing the work. I'm not honoring God and not helping people. I'm not teaching anybody the gospel. I'm not saving any souls. I'm not building any leaders. I'm not doing what God commissioned me to do if I'm spending my time wondering if my motives are right. Or explaining why I'm doing what I'm doing to anybody else. So how do you react when somebody does that? I love Nehemiah. This may be my favorite verse today. Look at verse 8. I sent him this reply. Nothing like what you're saying is happening. You're just making it up in your head. Can you talk like that in church? You can, folks. It's in the Bible. The next time somebody questions your motives, what you're saying is not happening and you're just making it up out of your head. I had an old teacher who said it this way. They got it from the fertile fields between their ears. Don't know what that means, just always sounded interesting. Can you look at somebody that's questioning your motives and say, you're just making that up out of your head? Can you? Yeah, but that's rude. Is that rude? Telling the truth is not rude, y'all. Now, your tone, you may need to watch. Yeah, you got to pay attention to that, right? But you have a right to say what the truth is. You do not have to yield to their accusation. Do they know your motives? Hang on. Do they know your motives? So how could they know whether the motive was right or wrong? They can't know those motives. So where would they get this idea? Last point on this and then we're done, but where would you get this idea? Where would Sanballat or Geshem the Arab, who knew everything, where would they get the idea that maybe Nehemiah was doing this so he could become king? That's exactly what they would do. Most of the time when somebody questions your motives, so hang on, guys, rather than talk about them, let's talk about us. When you get ready to question somebody's motives, you might ought to be real careful, because you know what you're exposing? Your own desires, your own thinking, your own motives. So be very careful. Well, I know why you're doing that. And that's whether you say it to somebody in church or whether you say it in your family or say it to somebody at your job. No, you don't know. So be careful about saying that, because you're revealing maybe more than you want to reveal. So they're going to get us, they're going to try to compromise us in the plane of oh no. And what do we say? Oh no. They're going to try to question our motives and stir up trouble. What do we do? You made that up out of your head. Now, last one. And verse 9 says, and they were just trying to threaten us, thinking their hands will get too weak for the work and it will not be completed. Again, their motive is stated. They were just trying to stop the work. I love how he responds, but I prayed, strengthen my hands. Now, one day I went to the house of Shemaiah, son of Deliah, the son of that person, who was shut in at his house. He said, let us meet in the house of God inside the temple, and let us close the temple doors, because men are coming to kill you. By night they are coming to kill you. Now, we got to do a real quick, you remember, what's the deal about the temple? Yeah, Nehemiah is not allowed in the temple. But this guy is saying, if you go in the temple, then you'll be safe. Would that be necessarily true? Not necessarily true, but even if it was true, he's saying what you need to do is you need to disobey God. You need to sin so that you can be safe. Look at Nehemiah's reply. Should a man like me run away? Who is Nehemiah? Who does Nehemiah see himself to be? Does he see himself as the king? Does he see him as the boss of everybody? No, in fact, if you watch him, what does he see himself as? He's a servant of God. I'm just a servant of God. I came down to do this job because God wanted me to do it. And the fact that you're helping me, that's good. Let's work together to get this done. And he says, should a man like me run away? Or should one like me go into the temple to save his life? Underline the next phrase. I will not go. I will not go. What did Nehemiah just teach me? What did Nehemiah just teach me? You obey God rather than men. We've learned it from the book of Acts in men who were building the church then. We've learned it from Nehemiah who was building the city of God back then. We've learned it in Proverbs that wisdom says you do not trust in man because that can become a snare to you. You put your trust in God. We've learned that. Now can we live it? Any example you have of anybody ever saying, listen, why don't you try this and seeing if that works, if that's not better for you? I've got an example. I just want to know if you've got one. I give you two or three extreme ones, and I'd like for you still to be thinking in terms of maybe in examples that are not so extreme. Somebody says, well, I've had a rough marriage, had a rough couple of marriages, whatever they're saying. I think what I'll do rather than get married, I'll just live with this woman or I'll live with this man. Because if you live together, then it guarantees that your marriage is going to be better. You know what? Number one, that's not true. Research says otherwise, but that's not the point. The point is, it's wrong. It's wrong. It makes a lot of sense, you know. You kind of have a practice run, but you know. It's wrong. No, I will not. I will not go. Now, well, I know you're having trouble getting off that stuff, so why don't you try some of this stuff? And I hear it all the time in jail. You know, man, I know I don't get off this, but I'm going to go ahead and keep doing this because that'll keep me from doing this. Guess what? Ain't so, but even if it is so, guess what? It's still illegal. It's still illegal, so I will not go. Thought of another one? Less extreme one? Why don't you let your hair down a little bit so you can understand what we're going through? If you've never done it, how can you say that it's wrong? All of those kind of statements, what do? I will not go. I will not go. I realized that God had not sent him, but that he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He had been hired to intimidate me so that I would commit a sin by doing this, and then they would give me a bad name and discredit me. So how does Nehemiah respond? I will not go. Three things we note, and then we're finished. When folks want to compromise, when they want you to compromise on what you know to be true, what you know to be right, what you know to be healthy for you, you say, oh no. When people question your motives and trying to keep you from doing the work in your life or in your family or in the church that God wants you to do, what do you do? What do you tell them? You just made that up out of your head. And three, if somebody encourages you, advises you, intimidates you to do what you know is wrong with the thought of it will give you some benefit, what do you do? I will not go. You refuse. And how many times do you refuse? Every time. Is there a better example than Jesus? It is written, man does not live by bread alone. It is written, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. It is written. Every time Jesus was tempted, he said it. No, no, no. I will not go. We'll talk about the prayers when we tie the knot.